to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my Blue Jay buddy, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. We've got Army, Navy, Michigan, Ohio State, Hopkins, Maryland. Yo, Dix, it is rivalry week. So, Dixie, let's get it. I'm fired up this week, Dixie.
You're shot out of a cannon.
I am. I've been very excited about this week. I think the Jays are going to get them this week. They're going to knock them from the unbeaten ranks and knock them off their pedestal in the greatest rivalry in college lacrosse. But more importantly, we'll get to that later. Can you believe it? Like, this weekend and next is kind of the end of the regular season. This has gone by really fast.
It feels like it happens every year. And I go back to my days as a player. Of course, we didn't have our first game until the first weekend in March. But the preseason seemed to last forever. Forever. And then once you hit that first game, which for us was always Princeton, then all of a sudden you're at, you know, Loyola, which was our regular season finale. The season just whips by because you're living week to week and you're going about your business and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, the season goes fast, you know, and we're just, I think we were teased a couple of weeks ago with some really, really nice weather. Yeah. Last weekend wasn't great. This week's been crummy, but now I think today's, you know, warming up a little bit. And I think this weekend is shaping up to be really, really nice weather-wise. But you hit the nail on the head, rivalry week. You know, in the Big Ten, it's Maryland Hopkins, Rutgers Penn State, and Michigan Ohio State. Army-Navy, the star game, is happening. So a lot of really cool stuff going on this weekend in college lacrosse.
Yeah, conference tournament's coming up right around the corner. Some of the seeding's already done. I was reading the Hopkins game notes. They already know they're going to play Penn State on April 30th in the quarterfinal for the Big Ten. It's some of it's set. Some of it is still to be determined. And a few leagues like the CAA, there's a lot of lacrosse left to be played in a short amount of time. I want to look at the RPI a little bit. And there's one thing that has jumped out at me. One of the teams that is ranked in the top 10, Jacksonville. Jacksonville, by all accounts, has had an incredible season to date. Some significant wins. They're in first place in their league. They are 12-2 overall. But they're 22nd in the RPI. And you know what's holding them back? They're one bad non-top 20 loss.
To Hopkins. Yeah.
Can you imagine them setting up the game against Johns Hopkins at Homewood Field and thinking, like, this is going to be the game that could keep us out of the at-large NCAA tournament.
Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it? And I was thinking about that this week and thinking, wow, that's how the times change.
Yeah, who would think that? And who would, you know, we were talking to Ray Carnicelli. I was, you know, the week before, and it's like, you know, if Jacksonville comes in and wins by 20 and he goes, hey, we just want to win by one. We don't need to win by 20. But I know we talked about it a lot. Like, this was the kind of the year for me, at least. I'm like, all right, John Galloway, let's go. You know, you got your recruits in place. You have your facilities. You have a lot of other things going. And man, they have played some outstanding lacrosse in 2022. But would you ever think, and, you know, I think for the most part, realistic fans knew what Hopkins was going to look like this year. I don't think they expected a double dip loss to Navy and Delaware midseason.
Killer.
I think there were some other things that have been surprising, but if you would have said back on February 1st, okay, on April, what are we today? April 21st, Jacksonville is going to be ranked, what, sixth or seventh in the country, eighth in the country, and Hopkins is not going to be anywhere near the top 20. Would you believe that?
That was just on the outside of the top 20. They're 21 in the RPI. They're actually ahead of Jacksonville in the RPI, and they're, you know, the way Inside Lacrosse does their top 20, it's easy to see who the first five out. So Hopkins would be ranked 25th in the media poll and 21st in the RPI. So they're not a top 20 team. That's been clear.
But when has that ever been acceptable at Hopkins?
It's not. But I mean, you think of we had a listener reach out to me and say, hey, can you talk about Penn State, how the times have changed, what may have happened to their season? And Syracuse is kind of in that same boat. Syracuse is a team that is not even in you know, if you look at they're 30th in the RPI. Penn State is 31st in the RPI. And these are two teams that were, you know, in contention for national championships just a few years ago, or playing for a trip to Memorial Day weekend. So I don't sure Hopkins it's that situation, but they're close. They're close. So we'll get to the Blue Jays. We'll talk about them a lot today, I think, because we haven't much all season.
Look at that with that smile on your face. It's like I don't know if that's an excited smile or a mischievous smile.
Yeah, I'm excited to be excited about Hopkins lacrosse. Let me put it that way. This week, okay, and their game against Maryland on ESPNU on Saturday night is, you know, it's appointment TV. I have some of my other buddies from Hopkins. We're talking about the game. Some of them want to get together, and one of the guys is like, hey, by the way, Hopkins is playing Maryland at 6 o'clock on Saturday night if you guys want to get together or something like that. And the comments weren't exactly, one person said, Hopkins are they D3 in lacrosse now? One person said they'll lose by 8 or 9 goals, which is not that guy's paying attention, because that's probably what the spread would be. But I'm excited to be talking about Hopkins this week, because we haven't had much to talk about them all season. They've been, you know, for two guys who love that school and that lacrosse program and have spent, I don't know how many years we've been doing this, they've been a topic of conversation a lot of times during the times we've been doing this podcast. They've been off the radar this season for us, which is kind of hard to believe. So I'm excited to talk about them, but let's get back to,
you want me to answer Penn State?
I want to get back to, you know, listener, and I know you are, you know, you're a Big Ten guy. You're the expert on Big Ten lacrosse. And what's going on in State College?
I don't know if I'm an expert. I don't know if anyone's an expert on anything, you know, but, I covering the Big Ten, I might have more information than most. So
you play you one look at on Penn TV.
Yes, exactly. When you look at Penn State, that's a program that lost the two best players in program history, really, in Grant Amant and Mac O'Keefe. I think the pandemic really hurt Penn State. You know, not 2019 was when they went to their first championship weekend, and 2020 was off to a little bit of a rough start, but I think that team was built to make another run at championship weekend, and then the pandemic hit. You know, Grant Amant doesn't return, and, you know, yada, 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 but if you look at this year's edition, the first and foremost are injuries. Their two best offensive players are not playing right now. TJ Malone hasn't played all year, and Jack Traynor hasn't played since the end of February. So right then and there, you have a lot of guys. You know, two guys. Take anyone's two best offensive players off of their team and see how they fare. You know, that's just something right off the bat. I think the other big thing, you know, if I'm looking for a criticism of Penn State, other than a guy like Chris Sabia, I'm not so sure that their defensemen have developed over the years, like from freshman year to the end of their career. And I know guys have had some injury time in State College, but I look at some of the guys who, like, you know, go there as freshmen and get significant minutes, if not start as freshmen. And then by the time they're like juniors and seniors, I don't feel like they've made that leap to, like, you know, a young player who's learning to then like an alpha male, you know, like a lockdown cover guy or an incredible communicator. I don't know. So those would be two things that I would point to. Also, they haven't gotten great goaltending over the years. I mean, Colby Canese, I know he's not a defenseman, but, you know, he lost his starting job at the end of last year to Alaric Fayok. And Fayok and Fresiel have had, you know, gone back and forth all year this year. So, you know, just like kind of, you know, tree level kind of things, treetop thoughts. Those are a handful that I have for Penn State.
The pandemic, it's like any other thing, you know, there's some people who could say, well, we all went through it. Yeah. But how it can affect people is different. And, you know, some teams may have been able to withstand it. Some people may have thrived because of it. And some people could be on the opposite side of it that have seemed to suffer, or it affected them more. Maybe not suffer, but it affected their team more, their culture more, their chemistry more. I think Hopkins is a team that is in. And, you know, your comment about Penn State, though, I believe that, you know, it can affect you more than others.
Well, and sports is a microcosm of life. And then down, you know, to a more micro level, lacrosse is. So just like relationships, you know people, I know people. There's some people who came out of the pandemic better before they were, exactly. You know, before things shut down. Then you have people that are still struggling with emotional, mental, physical. You know, it's all different. And lacrosse is no different. You've seen some teams come out of the pandemic. I mean, we're going to talk to Mike Daly later in this podcast. Who'd have thunk it that the Ivy League would come out playing the way that they are, you know, operating at the level that they are out of the pandemic? And then there's the converse to that, the teams that have come out of it struggling. So it's life, man. That's life.
Yeah, no, that's a great angle on that. And I think that wraps that up part of the conversation. And in midweek action, there was one significant game. Georgetown beat Loyola in a non-conference game.
I mean, I think you saw the number one, two ranked team in the country do what they do to teams. And that's play really, really good defense, get solid goaltending, get, you know, timely offense. Dylan Watson, that's really the first time I've sat down and watched him shoot for an extended period of time, meaning the course of an entire game. And damn, he can bring it. he's a terrific shooter. That's a legit team, Georgetown. But I've seen him on film throughout the year, and, you know, spurts and things of that nature. And I know how good they are and how good they can be. And, you know, Loyola is a team that really treated that game. Yeah, they wanted to win the game. But the Greyhounds' focus is on conquering the Patriot League at this point. Disappointing loss a week ago to Boston University at home, a game that was blown open by the Terriers in the third quarter. So, yeah, they competed and they played hard against Georgetown. But really, you know, this is a Loyola team kind of, you know, lining up more towards, you know, Colgate this weekend and then their season finale against Lehigh and then the Patriot League tournament. So really, like, people ask me not as much as they used to. Why don't Division III teams play Division I teams anymore, or vice versa? The bottom line is, and I don't mean to be a jerk about it, is the Division I teams have nothing to gain by playing Division III teams. It can only hurt them in the scheme of things. I think this game, Loyola looked at it as, we have nothing to lose, whereas if Georgetown would have lost that game, it would have hurt them in the, you know, in the metrics that are used in NCAA tournament selection and seeding. So, you know, that was kind of an overarching theme of that contest.
So, Dix, where are you going to be this weekend?
I'll be up at Rutgers. I've got a 4 o'clock game, Penn State at Rutgers. It's rivalry week this weekend in the Big Ten. Maryland Hopkins, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Rutgers. They play for the Friendship Cup, established by the late Tom Hayes, who played for and graduated from Penn State and then was a part of Rutgers program as head coach for 25, 26 years.
It's really cool. And they're honoring him, that the Tom Hayes on the back of the jerseys.
They have the names on the back of the jerseys, and also they will be honoring him with a celebration of life this weekend at Rutgers. So that'll be, you know, they waited till the end of the season, you know, obviously banking on nicer weather. It's senior day there. 27 seniors for Rutgers, 27, 15 grad transfers. Graduate students.
Is this the College of Business, or are you talking about the lacrosse team with 27 seniors?
Very veteran team in Piscataway.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so we'll have that game for you, myself and Jason Ross calling it this weekend on Big Ten Network at 4 o'clock. Then the Sunday night BTN game, and I will not be there. First Sunday night game I haven't been assigned to, but it'll be Greg Bice and Dean Linke will have Michigan, Ohio State. And that'll be great. I believe that's the first Sunday night game emanating from Ohio State. No, I take that back. They played Hopkins before Sunday night on BTN. I'm pretty sure. But anyway, huge game. Michigan beat Ohio State twice last year. The Buckeyes, looking for some payback, obviously. So that'll be a terrific game on Sunday night from the shoe.
Well, let's get to the big games this week. And I have a bunch that I want your comments on, more so than usual. There are five top 25 matchups. A few teams just outside of the Iowa media top
20. You're using that top 25 now.
Well, there's one in the Patriot League, and there's one in the SoCon that I'm including in this as well. So five top 25 matchups highlighting Saturday's schedule. That's loaded with important conference clashes and the two best rivalries in college lacrosse on Saturday. And let's start with the star game. This game's at noon on the CBS Sports Network. Navy, 7-5 overall, 3-3 in the Patriot League, go up to the Hudson. Face number 5, Army West Point, 10-2 and 5-1. This is a key Patriot League game, but there's a lot more at stake than this, as there is every year when these two teams meet.
Absolutely. And I'm not a service academy guy. My cousin played for the Naval Academy. So I live a little sense of, and I have, tons of friends, obviously, that played mostly at Navy. I do have some friends that played at Army, but unless you're really a part of this, you can't get it. You don't really understand it or truly appreciate it as much as it should be appreciated. But how about Army? I mean, going into Ithaca and beating Cornell 17-10, by a touchdown. Very, very impressive. A week after they had to rally to beat Colgate at home. Raider team that's really playing with a lot of passion right now. And then, Colgate goes and upsets Lehigh last weekend. So obviously Army's the favorite in this game, just based upon the way they're playing and the personnel that they have. But this is, this will be an intense rivalry game, Patriot League game, whatever moniker you want to throw up there. But Army's playing as well as anyone in the country, and they made significant moves in all the polls this week, Inside Lacrosse, the USILA poll, and rightly so. This is a Navy team that's been kind of wildly inconsistent this year, lost to Mount St. Mary's, but then they have some nice wins. They had a tough game against Lafayette last weekend. So obviously, the experience and kind of the body of work favors Army, but, Joe Amplo is going to have the midshipmen ready to, no pun intended, amped up to play the Black Knights this coming weekend.
Yeah, and Army 5-1 in the Patriot League, they may need to win the Patriot AQ to get into the NCAA tournament. They're currently, it's hard to believe, but they're 20th in the RPI.
Even with that win over Cornell, it didn't boost them up that much.
20th in the RPI. So they need to continue winning, and this will be a key step for them in that that journey.
I try not to look too far ahead. That's one thing that I'm trying to do is, live more in the moment. When everyone's looking so forward to the NCAA tournament, I feel like, and it's not just lacrosse. It's college basketball. It's college football, projecting bowl games and the college football playoff. It's like, I feel like you get to that quarter point or midpoint of the season. Everyone's just talking about either RPI, tournament seeding, what path to the NCAA tournament, or next year even. Hey, they're going to be really good next year. Okay, but what about now? Let's live in the moment now and bask in the present.
Well, we can live in the moment because first place is on the line in the America East this Saturday at noon. And Binghamton is 3-1 in the American East. They travel to Vermont to take on the Catamounts, who are undefeated, 4-0. And fans can catch this on AmericaEast.tv. Your thoughts on this one?
Vermont is the reigning America East champ, right? So got to give the advantage to the Catamounts. And this is a conference where Stony Brook is not in play. They are not eligible for postseason play. And the Seawolves have a nice team. So that's a.
How come? I don't know.
Because
don't
they're
know
switching conferences. They're switching from the America East to, I'm not sure what Stony Brook is joining, but as a.
CAA?
Might be CAA. Yeah. Don't quote me on that, though. And I apologize to the Stony Brook folks. But almost like punitive, they're not eligible. The men's or women's lacrosse teams are not eligible to compete for America East championships this year. So that opens up an opportunity for a program like Binghamton. And they're having a nice year. I mean, Kevin McCune's done a nice job up there. And obviously a very emotional with the death of a player a couple weeks ago. This is a Binghamton team, you know, playing with a lot of heart right now against the favorite in Vermont. And it'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend.
Another top 25 matchup for number 23 High Point, 7-5 overall, 2-1 in the SoCon, hosts number 18 Richmond, 7-4, 2-1 in the SoCon, in a game that they're trying to get the number 2 seed in the SoCon tournament.
It's like a, you know, I'm a big pro wrestling fan, the triple threat match where you have the three contenders in the ring at the same time. And obviously this isn't happening. You know, they got to play each other one at a time. But, I mean, the Richmond, High Point, Jacksonville triumvirate in the SoCon this year has been really, really interesting, with Jacksonville being able to score a big win over Duke, Richmond, big win over Virginia, like sort of that high-profile win has eluded the Panthers. And they've done it in the past, though. And they still have Asher Nolting, and they still have wonderful players. So this is a big game for both teams. But, you know, obviously this is really about the seeding in the postseason tournament of the SoCon.
Moving on to some Ivy League games. Number 8 Cornell is going to host number 14 Brown. Before we talk about that game, Dix, we had a great chance to sit down with Brown head coach Mike Daly this week. Let's bring in Coach for that conversation. I'd like to welcome into the D-Fly and Dixie podcast Brown head coach Mike Daly. Coach, thanks for joining us.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Coach, your Brown Bears currently sit 7-4 on the season overall. And we've spoken to a couple of other Ivy League coaches thus far in 2022, but we always like to get the individual takes. Obviously, the pandemic shut down the 2020 season, and the Ivy League was unique last year in that they didn't compete as a conference. What have things been like in Providence for 2022 for Brown Lacrosse, and how did you manage last year with your guys not being, together for the most part?
Well, we were actually one of the very few teams that we had our entire program together last year. Took great pride in that. Felt that was a great reflection of our players' love of Brown, love of the program, and most importantly, love of each other. And to your point, that was honestly probably the more challenging road and the more challenging path. And so it just feels amazing to have this season, be in the locker room, be on buses, be on planes, travel, and get the opportunities, you know, that we have. And certainly there's been some ups and downs, and you know, I think that's a little bit of the product of that. But you know, at the moment, we're in a pretty good place, and just trying to make sure we recognize those scars and those, those black eyes, and keep our head down and keep working.
In a situation where you have something, you know, quote unquote, taken away from you, and that was a season of competition, in this year when you're back playing out of conference games in addition to your Ivy League slate, are there some things that you and your players and staff have grown to be like, you know what, we really appreciate this a little bit more than we did in the past?
Yeah, I'll tell you where that really, you know, hit home to your point exactly. We were on break, so we were able to travel to Carolina, you know, and it honestly, to be in an airplane, to be in a hotel, have team dinners. We had an awesome team event out at Charlotte Motor Speedway and did some racing and stuff like that. So just those things, I mean, you know, at points last year, even guys just being in their apartments were reported for COVID violations when it literally was the 10 guys that live in that house. And so team dinners, team functions, team, you know, even when we went to BU last year and we were the only Ivy League team to play a Division I game and we took 3 buses and that was weird. You know, we weren't together. So those moments, you know, like I said, where we're able to do some team stuff, team building, team dinners, just those little micro interactions. And then, you know, obviously being in the locker room is definitely just that great space for our guys to be guys and be a team. So for sure, we've felt that.
Coach, you guys started the season very strong, 5-1. Had a 3-game losing streak, but the last 2 weeks you've had 2 top 10 wins in the Ivy League against great opponents. And you're playing some of the best lacrosse of any team in the country right now. How would you characterize your season to date and summarize the way you guys have played with really just a couple weeks left in the regular season? Hard to believe.
Yeah, no question. And it's, you know, I mean, when we went into that first league game, we're looking at it in, you know, essentially our seniors were the only guys on the roster that had played a league game, actually, not even really. So you know, it's going way back to that 2019 season. You know, we had some sophomores who started to emerge, and you know, and then that season ends and they don't go through a league schedule. They do not go through the grind of what it takes to compete at this level for, you know, 14, 15, 16 games. So I'd say, you know, certainly in that 3-game losing streak, that was something, you know, that, like I said, 2 of those were league games, and just that experience and what it takes to compete at that level certainly was what we needed to find. And you know, went down to Penn and we're down 5-0 after 1 and we were still searching, and luckily, you know, what transpired there was just kind of that realization of, hey, you know, if we just do what those Coach Holm and Coach Feck are asking us to do offensively and defensively, it works, and we had success. And then that just really steamrolled into that game last week against Yale, and just credit to those 2 coaches for getting the team, you know, winning versus their stubbornness and their hard candy shells. So but the players couldn't be in a better place. We have 17 seniors on the roster, so we're pretty excited about the rest of the opportunity here.
What's been the difference the last 2 weeks for the Brown Bears, turning, you know, a 3-game losing streak into a 2-game winning streak against 2 top 10 teams?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is the players and the seniors. I mean, just never wavering, never quitting, never letting, you know, that doubt creep in, you know, and frankly, you know, those 3 games were, honestly, we really felt 2 to 3 different plays away, key plays away and key times, and just having that mentality and having that mental toughness to really believe that we weren't that far away. And, you know, then even being down, like I said, 5-0 at Penn, there were opportunities to waver, to wobble, to start to question things, and to have those guys, you know, hang in there. And literally it's 2 to 3 more plays in that Penn game. And, you know, thankfully in that Yale game, I think it was probably 3 or 4 plays that we made to the good side. And, you know, now you're starting to roll a little bit.
Coach, everyone's talking about the Ivy League this season, especially on a national level. For example, Penn, which currently sits in 6th place in the Ivy League, is number five in the RPI this week through you know, mid-April. How do you characterize the success the Ivy League's having in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising to us that do it all day. I mean, obviously, the last couple of years, it's been tough hearing, we'll never, you know, the Ivy League will never recover. They'll never be able to recruit. They'll never be able to this, the that. So it's been pretty satisfying, I guess, on some levels to, you know what we know and you know, have the kids play at the level that they're at. And, you know, and that's another, you know, kind of piece we're trying to stay focused on. And we've dug ourselves a little bit of a hole with that three game stretch we were talking about, but, you know, if the season ended, we'd be in a pretty good place. Well, if the season ended, we also wouldn't be in the Ivy League tournament today. So there's still a lot of work to be done. There's still a lot of lacrosse to be played, even though, as you said, there's only two more weekends, which is pretty crazy to fathom. But, you know, as I said, we're focused on Cornell. Obviously, that's a big one that starts to sort out some of that craziness. And, you know, obviously they're having a heck of a year, and playing up at Cornell is always a challenge. So, you know, as I said, we've got work to do.
A lot has been made of the transfer portal over the last couple of years, and looks like it's here to stay, obviously. Some Division III players have had success moving from that division of lacrosse into Division I. I think about this year, Ronan Jacoby at Rutgers is having a nice season after coming over from Wesleyan. Rewind a little bit. You yourself made the jump from Division III to Division I as a head coach after a very successful stint at Tufts University. You come over to Brown. What were some of the challenges moving from Division III to Division I, and what were some of the things that maybe wasn't as significant as you thought it may have been?
Yeah, no, I mean, clearly our sport is very, very unique with only 70 Division I schools, give or take a few. And so, you know, so that top end of that Division III slate is as competitive as a lot of Division I schools and things. So, you know, it really felt, the goalie play was very different. You know, again, with only 70 Division I schools, you know, clearly those recruiting spots and just sheer numbers, you know, in there. But, you know, clearly, you know, with the Walbon kid down at Jacksonville, you know, there, as you said, there's a lot of those NESCAC guys moving up and able to compete. And, you know, our last 6 or 7 years at Tufts, in a very similar situation to the Ivy League, with everybody already playing before we get that opportunity to play those preseason scrimmages. You know, I think our last 6 or 7 years, like I said, we either scrimmaged Harvard, Yale, or the Boston Cannons 1 year just to find, you know, top competition to get ready for those schedules. So, you know, there was a lot of comfort in some ways, just kind of knowing the level. But you know, certainly, you know, and again, playing in the NESCAC where there weren't any days off and any easy games or any of those things. I mean, certainly that's the grind here. I mean, I don't feel we have any bad losses in some ways. I mean, you know, everybody's good. I mean, and everybody's well coached and everybody cares about it. So, so, you know, there's definitely some resource differences, definitely some, you know, exposure differences, but I think lacrosse is unique in that level. Where some of those top-end Division III schools give you a lot of headaches.
Coach, I'm going to let you make a little recruiting pitch here. Providence, Rhode Island, is a unique college town, and Brown has a vibe all of its own. In your opinion, what makes Brown just different and a fantastic place to go to college?
Yeah, no, it's funny you ask that. My daughter was just on campus on Monday. She's a 2023, so she did Brown in the morning, and then went up to Dartmouth and did Dartmouth in the afternoon. So we're living it on every level, and you know, Brown's just an amazing place. Of, I think the most unique part is the open curriculum. That's what our daughter was most excited about, and the ability, or most importantly, the, you know, to not have to take any requirements here at Brown. Just really takes that liberal arts education to another level, and our kids are taking classes they want to take, taking them for the right reasons, and it's just super, you know, the success that comes out of that. Our team GPA hasn't been below a 3.6 since I've been here, and I think the last couple of years we've been around a 3.75, 3.77. So, you know, just those guys are, it's a happy, fun place to be in school. Like I said, without those requirements hanging over your head, you know, it's not like you're slugging through some, you know, language requirement or culture credit or something that, like I said, you're not really interested in. And it just really allows our guys to focus on the important things of school and then their lacrosse lives, and just generally be happier. So, you know, and then Providence has been an unbelievable move for our family. It's a cool little town and pretty central, located within the league. So our league travel isn't overwhelming by any means. And just a great place to be, great alumni, great people, pretty special transformational place.
Two things to follow up on that, Coach. One, with those types of GPAs, it's safe to say Dan could not get in or stay at Brown. So I want to make that point first and foremost.
I would love the open curriculum. Is
getting in. If he can get in, he can do the work here.
I would have loved to take classes that I wanted to take, and not molecular cell biology too, you know?
You and me both. You and me Physics. Both. Yeah. One thing, you know, we love to talk about food on this podcast. And whenever you talk to a Brown alum, and I'll give a shout out to Bill Friedman, a producer at Big Ten Network, who I do a lot of work with. He always talks about the restaurants and the food scene in Providence. How would you best describe that? What are some of the daily family favorites?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because, and believe me, I will not exaggerate too much. I mean, but Leaving Tufts, you know, a consideration. I get, we had some awesome Boston delis and Boston spots, and, you know, obviously the North End of Boston and all of that. So, like I said, I won't exaggerate and say it was a huge factor in the decision to come here, but it was certainly in our mind, like, oh my gosh, we're going to miss what we had up there. And, you know, honestly, Providence has exceeded it. You know, we've got the original Capitol Grill in downtown Providence, which is one of our favorites for sure. But then Thayer Street, which runs right through the middle of, basically separates campus from the athletic facilities. And it's got everything from, you know, awesome burritos to an Antonio's Pizza to Shake Shack to Mike's Calzones, bunch of different little coffee shops. So it's a pretty awesome place to be around, all within walking distance of our offices. But at the end of the day, I'm more of a hard hat lunch pail, bring my own lunch guy. So got to pay for that college for this daughter coming up here, right?
Understood. One of the best lines I heard over the last few months was David Evans, one of my high school teammates and one of Brown's greats. You know, he's like, Dix, I'm from Dundalk. You know, he goes, I know the best places to eat for cheap in Providence, trust me. Yeah. So he gave us some great ideas as well. In addition to wearing your coaching hat, Mike, you have a role with the NCAA selection committee for the NCAA tournament. Could you share with us what you do with them?
Yeah, it's just a regional advisory committee made up of coaches, one from each conference, that just provides some texture and some eyeball test to the numbers. So that hopefully as that selection committee comes down to, you know, the ultimate decision of who makes that tournament. You know, I think the goal is to obviously get the best and most representative, you know, teams in the thing, but the best teams in the tournament. And this year is, I mean, it's as challenging a process as you could imagine. I mean, there's so many good teams from so many great conferences to, you know, Jacksonville, who's having a great year and beating Duke and, you know, a lot of great wins. So how do you make sense of, you know, just our league too, where, you know, Princeton's, you know, I think nationally in that two or three spot. I think Maryland's ahead of everybody right now, but Princeton loses to Yale, Brown beats. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. So kind of trying to make sense of that from a human perspective, you know, is what our role as coaches on that is, you know, so it's not just what the RPI says and those are the top teams, you know.
So the 2022 Brown Bears, you got a number of terrific players, and obviously you guys have been playing very well over the last couple of weeks. Who are the leaders of your squad this year? Who are the guys that are the main voices in the locker room and the guys that really lead the charge?
Yeah, no, as I said earlier, we're blessed to have 17 seniors on the roster this year, and you know, our captains have done a phenomenal job. Ryan Ogavin's in his fifth year here at Brown, thankfully. You know, he's definitely a little bit more of the vocal side of the leadership, a little bit more of our heartbeat, if you will. You know, Long Island guy, son of a FDNY guy, so pretty tough, gritty, blue-collar Long Island guy. And then Luke Gatos, really the senior leader of our defense, who just does it with his, you know, toughness and grit and just making plays because he's working harder than anybody. And then Nolan Rockefeller is another offensive guy for us who's just always doing the right thing, always there, always herding the sheep of everyone, and just a really special guy. And then, you know, a couple of seniors, Silas Newsom, Grayson Wolfram, you know, Reed Machete playing through injuries and just really showing, you know, those younger guys what grit and toughness looks like. And so many contributions, you know, within that group. And Adrian Inchel, another fifth-year guy, who just wills himself into success. And again, just another great reflection of toughness and those tough ground balls. Really what got us going against Penn were a lot of plays in that face-off phase with Adrian Inchel and George Pike on the two wings. And we weren't winning a lot of clamps. We weren't winning a lot of draws. But we were winning those battles with like I said, Adrian Inchel, George Pike in the middle of the field. So we're blessed right now with that whole group, that whole senior group, and a lot of them making very, very key contributions on game day.
Coach, we really appreciate your time on the podcast. One final question we ask all the coaches. You're in the middle of the grind of the Ivy League season, playing top 10 team or top 10 team. And your reward is you get to go to Ithaca this weekend to play a really hungry Cornell team. But if you get a chance to unplug, relax for just a moment, what do you like to do? What's Coach Daly do to relax, get away from lacrosse a little bit? Are you a TV show, a Netflix kind of guy? Do you listen to music? What do you like to do?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, you know, most of my life is spent with other people's kids, and traveling with them and trying to, like I said, knock through those hard candy shells. So nothing better than our two kids, Fiona and Liam, and going to their sporting events and just being a dad and a fan. And you know, it's always, it's especially a challenge at our son's lacrosse games because, you know, everybody, hey, what's this rule? What's that rule? What's it? I'm like, listen, I'm just here to watch my kid. Leave me alone. And, you know, so trying to keep my head down and focus there. And, you know, and then other than that, it's a big NASCAR fan. So, which is lucky. It's not an NCAA sport, so I don't bet, but I could bet on NASCAR if I wanted to. And like I said, we were down in Charlotte, you know, took the guys out to Charlotte Motor Speedway, put everybody in race cars and just really brought a few of our guys, new fans to the NASCAR scene and following it, and got to do a tour of Stewart Haas Racing race shop and really kind of, like I said, bring our guys, expand their world views a little bit into that. So other than that, pretty narrow guy, a little golf here and there, but that's about it.
All right, I got to ask you, who are your favorite drivers, past and present?
Yeah, I grew up as a Dale Earnhardt Sr. fan. Luckily, was at the 1998 Daytona 500 when he won. And then the lacrosse coaching thing kind of put an end to the Daytona 500 days. But then followed that through as a Dale Jr. fan. And luckily, during our Tufts days, we had a Tufts alum, Andy Merstein, who owned Richard Petty Motorsports for a while. So always followed those guys. So after one of our championships up there, we got a Tufts lacrosse sticker on the side of the 43 car for a race up in New Hampshire. So that was a pretty cool experience. And then one of our Brown alums, Brett Frood, is the president of Stewart Haas Racing. So we've been pretty blessed all along to have some pretty good connections in it. So right now we're big Stewart Haas Racing fans, probably Kevin Harvick for me. And a lot of the guys actually gravitated toward young Chase Briscoe in the 14 car while we were down there. So pretty cool stuff.
Coach, I mean, you've always played an up and down tempo at Tufts and now at Brown. Maybe you guys were the original NASCAR offense.
Yeah.
This fits.
Yep. Yep. So no, you call it whatever you want to call it, as long as we win. Right. So
right on, right on.
Well, Coach Daly, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck this week against Cornell and throughout the rest of the regular season. Hope to have you back again soon.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
It seems like this team is on a roll and a fun place to play lacrosse right now.
Had an opportunity to watch Brown practice in the fall, and the energy and the excitement, the juice was flowing in Providence. This is a group that really enjoys each other. They enjoy competing. You know, they're kind of, you know, they're, you know the way lacrosse works, and you know the way that college athletics work. Your team is kind of your second family type thing, and you're very tight. And it was easy to see that these guys are very tight knit and very close. And I think that Coach Daly and his staff have done an incredible job of, you know, of leading that program, taking over for a group led by Lars Tiffany that went to Virginia on the heels of a championship weekend appearance back in 2016. So, and this is a Brown team that seems to be rounding in the form over the last couple of weeks, some nice wins and playing with a lot of momentum. And now they get to host Cornell they're traveling to Cornell. And now they have a tough task of traveling to Ithaca to play the Cornell Big Red that are smarting from that loss to Army. So it should be a great game. And that was a really fun conversation that we had with Mike Daly.
Yeah, speaking of how tough the Ivy League is, I think I mentioned it in the conversation with him that Penn wouldn't even be in the Ivy League tournament. They're currently sixth in the Ivy League standings and fifth in the RPI, the national RPI. And that just, man, the league is tough, and it's a game after game, just week after week, you're just playing another top 10 team and another top 20 matchup.
But whenever I hear that scenario, I always think of Hofstra years ago. I don't know when it was, but remember Hofstra didn't make the CAA tournament, I think it was. And then, but they still made the NCAA tournament based on their, all the other metrics. So it's not unheard of.
Well, we've seen it in the ACC when the ACC used to have, you know, the top four teams would make the ACC tournament.
Right.
And that one or two teams would be left out, and you could be a top 10 team and not make the ACC tournament. Two teams that will be fighting for a spot in that Ivy League tournament also meet in Boston on Saturday at 1 o'clock. Will be number 13 Harvard hosting Princeton, who's number three. Tigers are 3-1 in the Ivy League. Harvard is 2-2.
Is the game at Harvard?
It's not Harvard.
Is anywhere near Dorchester? Dorchester. So this is the meat grinder of Harvard. Their last four games are what? Penn, Princeton, Cornell, Yale, right? You know, so
yeah,
so
they still have to play Yale. They still have to play Yale.
So they continue through this tough stretch with a young team and a team that's trying to manufacture goals, going up against a Princeton team that's being mentioned more and more as we progress into this season as a bona fide championship weekend contender. And when people are having the conversation of like, who can beat Maryland? You know, what team matches up with Maryland? Although Princeton played the Terps earlier this year and lost 15-10, Princeton is one of those teams that people will bring up as a potential threat to the Terps. So we'll see. We'll see. A big Ivy League game, obviously. Harvard needs this one. They really do. I mean, obviously, to qualify for that Ivy tournament.
And it would be a significant win for Harvard in other ways. They're 15th in the RPI. A win over Princeton, the number two RPI team, not only helps them in the Ivy League standing, but it could bump them up into a better consideration for an at-large spot to give them a really significant win in their resume. In the Patriot League, 3 o'clock on ESPN Plus streaming, number 15, Boston University, 9-3 overall, 6-0 in the Patriot League. Play at number 22, Lehigh, 7-4, 5-1 in the Patriot League. First place on the line in the Patriot League.
Now, that is a team I did get to see last week in person. I did go to the Loyola BU game and was very impressed. Good goaltending, solid at the faceoff dot, but their attack is very crafty. They're deceptively slick, and that's a good lacrosse team, you know, and they ride relentless. That's one of the things that I really like walked away being like, wow, that's a really tough riding team. Their attack unit's a slick unit, you know, Vince D'Alto, Louis Perfetto, and Timmy Lay, really nice players. And, you know, I mentioned their goaltending, you know, Matt Garber is really good. I mean, he's saving around 55, 56%. And they're incredibly red. Like, I've never seen a redder uniform than the Boston Terriers. But Lehigh, coming off of that loss to Colgate, tough loss for them. You know, Patriot League seeding is in play. I mean, quarterfinals are next week, right? Or 2 weeks. With the, you know, quarterfinals team gets to host that, the top seeds, the three and the fours get to host those quarterfinal games. And then whoever wins the regular season title, that's where the Patriot League tournament is, you know, so Army, BU, Lehigh, Loyola, they're all in that mix right now. So big, you know, huge game, obviously, for the Patriot.
There's one game left for primetime lacrosse, and it is the greatest rivalry in the sport. Number one, Maryland, undefeated, 4-0 in the Big Ten. Go to Homewood Field to face the number 25 ranked Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, who are underwater at 6-7 overall, but 2-2 in the Big Ten. And game's at 6 o'clock. It's on ESPNU. And I'm telling you, the Jays are going to get them.
You're feeling confident. Why do you think that this is the Blue Jays' day?
I am not confident they're going to win. I'm trying to convince myself to believe this. I want to get your opinion. Do you think they have a chance? Obviously, they're going to need to win faceoffs, get great goal play from Josh Kersen. And for God's sakes, they got to cut down the turnovers. I think they have average about 17 turnovers a game, but it seems like every time I watch them, they're like in the 20 plus range. And so many of them are unforced. I just don't understand the passing and the catching sometimes, but they got to be like around single digit or 10 turnovers to have a chance in this game. But I like to believe I can dream. I can dream, Dix. I can dream. What do you think the spread is in this game? I believe it's about 8 or 9 goals would be a realistic spread for this one.
I think you take I think you take, you know, Maryland's giving Hopkins 5.5. That's what I would say.
That sounds about right. Exactly what it should be. Honestly.
Yeah.
At Homewood Field, throwing the rivalry part of it. Prime time.
Should be a big crowd.
Yeah, weather's going to be nice.
Again, hard to believe, but I guess happy it is happening. You know, even though it's been over 2 years, the alumni for Hopkins allowed to get together lacrosse-wise for a gathering, golf outing on Friday, and then some festivities on Saturday. Again, I just feel like it's been way too long for that to happen, but that's just me, I guess. Think about Villanova, Georgetown, 1985 national championship game.
You think it's that?
Is that Hopkins kind of situation? Hopkins has to be Villanova. They got to shoot 75% from the field. No, I mean, no. Look, they're going to have to play.
Who will be Harold Jensen?
Who will be Harold Jensen? Who's going to be, you know, Dwayne McClain and Ed Pinckney? And Ed Pinckney is Garrett Degnan. That's all I'm going to say. That
got
Pinckney
one.
Is Garrett Degnan. Harold Jensen is Mike is DeSimo.
No,
that's what I'm thinking.
Ryan Evans.
Ryan Evans. Okay. He's had a good year, real good year.
Yeah, he's come on late. It's great to see.
He really has. Nice feature on Hopkins Athletic website.
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
Ryan, his dad, Dan, who was a teammate of mine, and his grandfather, Joe Cowan. That was pretty cool.
That was
cool. But no, look, Maryland, we saw Maryland be mortal last week. Ohio State played them incredibly tough. That was a fun game to call this past weekend in College Park. And Maryland just owned the fourth quarter. They were winning faceoffs. They were getting saves. They were just, you know, relentless in attacking and showing off their depth, showing off their scoring ability. I mean, it was impressive.
Yeah. That's the one thing that keeps coming back about this particular Maryland team is that they are relentless. They play a full 60 minutes and they never let up. And if you relax for a little bit of a stretch, the game has been blown wide open. You can't let it happen.
Do it with depth. You know, four very capable short stick D middies, a stout defense, two terrific long stick middies, two poles, and an offense that just doesn't care who scores, who gets the credit. They're constantly making the one more. I mean, Jonathan Donville, those two plays that he made in the fourth quarter against Ohio State, getting squeezed a little bit down the alley, and then boom, cross cage, cross crease, dunk, dunk. So unselfish and so well coached. You know, Bobby Benson coming back to Hopkins with a crowd this year. You know, we saw kind of the emotion and the support that Dave Petromala got from the fans back in March when Syracuse came to Homewood Field. You know, Benson was at Homewood once last year, but it was like no crowd or only parents were allowed, right? So now full house. What kind of reception will Bobby Benson get? It'll be a festive, exciting day at Homewood Field.
Yeah, I can't wait. Ken, that's 6 o'clock, and make your plans. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go, and let's stay in the midst of the greatest rivalry in college lacrosse. I've been thinking about this last century, since 2000, of Hopkins, Maryland, and I put together my all-Hopkins team from 2000 on, and I want to run by some of these names for you, and you tell me if I'm missing somebody, if I'm right on.
I'm not great with years, by the way, like especially now that I've been doing this for such a long time, and I'm not great with years, so but you'll know I'll give it.
You'll know these names. These names, you'll know. All right, so Hopkins has been, you know, the best unit of Hopkins has been the midfield since the year 2000, and you know it's produced guys like Adam Doniger, Paul Rabil, Kyle Harrison, Michael Kimmel, Joel Tinney, and I couldn't leave this guy off. He's one of my favorite Hopkins players ever to watch. AJ Hogan graduated in 2000, was a three-time first-team All-American, but he's a 2000 grad, so he makes the cut. And those are my guys for the midfield unit. Defense have some great defensemen too, and I'm putting Tucker Durkin, Tom Garvey, Michael Evans is my Hopkins defensive unit. In goal, Brian Carter, I think graduated in 2000, but I'm going to go with Jesse Schwartzman, who won two national championships and was the most outstanding player in the 2005 and 2007. NCAA championship games. That's my goalie. The place where the unit that is thin, I'll say, is the attack unit. I'm going to go with Kevin Hundley, Ryan Brown. I'm going to put Dan Denahan, who was a 2000 grad on there, just makes the cut. I needed him on there to balance that out. And that's my team. That's my team of the century for Hopkins lacrosse to date. I'm sure there'll be, we still have 78 years of guys to add to this.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think? Now I want you to name Maryland's. I want you to put together Maryland's team.
Oh my God. Really?
No, I have notes on Maryland too.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's, well, look, some Hopkins guys that I would throw in there, attack Stephen Boyle. I'd put Stephen Boyle in there. You want to talk about a guy who just really anchored those, you know, those national championship teams, that 07 team from behind the cage. Goalies, you got to mention Mike Gavazdin and Eric Schneider.
Pierce Bassett was a four-year starter.
Pierce, yeah. But no, I don't think you can go wrong with, I mean, particularly Jesse Schwartzman. I mean, he won the two national championships. But Mike Gavazdin doing great things with Goalie Smith these days. And I follow Schneider's Shack, Eric Schneider's cooking thing on Instagram. But he also led the Jays to their last national semifinal appearance, right? 2015, when they lost to Maryland in that thrilling game. I think it was 2015 when Hopkins was last in the final
four. I think he was the goalie that year. Yeah.
You know, yeah, he was a goalie.
You know, it's interesting when you think about – you know, championship teams like 2005, 2007, you usually think of the, you know, the goal scorers is who you remember. The Hopkins, their 2005 national championship team, you'd say, well, surely they had a second team, third team All-American attackman, maybe one or two guys get honors.
But it was Kyle Barry and
Jake Byrne, honorable mention All-American. He's the only attackman who made it onto the All-American list than that year. And then in 2007, you know, Stephen Boyle, as you mentioned, and Jake Byrne, both honorable mention All-Americans. Which,
how could I forget Jake Byrne too? I mean, yeah. That 05 goal in the semis that sent the game to overtime against against Virginia. And then, you know, I think you got to look at short stick Dean Mitty, Benson Irwin off that team. Pretty darn special. Sure. But Lesore was just kind of like, you know, the quarterback and kind of kept everything together. Just a real heady player, real smart player. Okay, Maryland. I can do Maryland.
Let me start with the attack. Compare the Hopkins attack.
I got it. It's Rambo, Bernhardt, Wisnowskis, and Heacock.
I'm going to throw Joe Walters on there too.
Joe Walters, absolutely. Incredible player. Yeah, incredible. Gosh, when you talk about defense, Tim Muller was terrific. Michael Earhart. Oh, boy.
Lee Zink,
yeah.
Ray
this
McGill.
Is hard without anything like right in front of me.
Again, I did a little research. Michael Howley, Brian Farrell.
Yeah. Oh, Farrell was excellent. Long stick midi. Still Chris one of the Pasavilla. Best goals.
Chris Pasavilla.
Yeah. Pasavilla and Zink were complete opposites. Zink was a sit down, you know, position, footwork. Pasavia was the whopper chopper. I mean, that guy used to, this is the Ginsu, man. He just threw every check in the book. Sure.
Midfield's a little tougher. I would say Hopkins gets the definitely has the advantage at midfield over the last 20-some years. But they've had some greats, too. They've had some really good ones.
Well, you know, Maryland, I right away, for whatever reason, I think of Joe LoCascio was a terrific midi for Maryland for years. Connor Kelly, though he played mostly attack in his later years, you could put him at midfield. Tim Rotance was an integral part of that 2017 national championship team. Who were some of the other middies? Help me out.
Bill McGlone.
Good player, yeah. Really good player.
Bill, first-team All-American. John Hawes.
Oh, my God. How can I forget Hawes? Yeah, sure.
And Mike Chanichuk.
I love Chanichuk. Yeah, he was one of my favorites. He wore that number one, too. He might be, during that run of number ones, he might be the only midfielder that has worn number one, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, great unit.
Did Connor Kelly wear number one?
He did, but again, when he wore number one, he was more on the attack side of things.
And then goalie. They've had some good first-team All-American goalies.
Oh, gosh. Kyle Bernlohr. Right away pops into my head.
I'm going to give it to Nico Amato would be my
Nico Amato. Yeah, he's good. Sure. I mean, Logan McNaney right now is pretty darn good.
He's very good. Yeah. He's very good.
And Dan Morris is the one that won the national championship. And he might be the least heralded of them all.
Well, that's my list. Pretty tough squads, man. I put those teams up against just about anybody.
God, you really got me on that one, because I'd really have to go back and look. You know, again, the years kind of run together, and you forget that we're in 2022 and, you know, 2000, man. I mean, that was when, God, I was still on radio, and 04 is when I really started in earnest on television. So I've covered a lot of these guys. You got to give a nod to Kevin Boland for Hopkins, by the way. All-time great assist player. Leader in the midfield, I think, for the Jays.
Kevin was third team All American a couple times.
Yeah, Boland was a hell of a really player. Nice.
Yeah.
How about face-off guys? Charlie Raffa for Maryland.
Matt Delente for Hopkins was first team All American. Yeah,
sure.
Mike Poppleton. I think he was second team All American.
Poplock. Yeah. Wow. Wow. How about that? Look at that. Just proving how old we really are.
No, it just has the, you know, in order to have a great rivalry, you have to have great games, great meaningful games, and you need great players. And who's going to step up this week, Dix? Who's going to step up, you know, this week and, you know, next week when Hopkins plays Maryland for the Big Ten Championship, or 2 weeks from now when Hopkins plays Maryland for the Big Ten Championship? Who's going to be the guys, the stars that rise to the occasion?
Guess we'll have to wait and see.
That seems like a great place to start. I'd like to thank our guest this week, Brown head coach Mike Daly. Thanks, coach, for joining us. Best of luck this week and throughout the season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app. Leave a review, tell a friend, share the love. It's all free, and you help us out. We always love to hear from you. Just give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse. I'm simply at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.
Should I not say that? Did you want me to answer that question?